Hello, everybody, and welcome into another exciting episode of Bloody Good Horror. My name's Eric, and I'll be your host for this evening, where we will be reviewing A Haunting in Venice. That's right. It's the latest adventure of Hercule Poirot, or Kenneth Branagh with a weird fake mustache. Joining me tonight, first up from the Bay Area, San Francisco, please welcome Rachel to the show.
First, hey, I feel like I just got a promotion.
It's the hair. Next up from Manhattan, New York City, please welcome John Schnars to the show.
Hello, Eric.
And last up tonight from Indiana, please welcome Casey.
Hello.
I went to a theater on a Tuesday, John. And now I'm sick.
Haven't you been going to the theater on... I feel like you've been a Tuesday regular.
No, he's been on Fridays.
Thank you, Casey. Okay. Thank you.
I pay attention.
Thank you.
Well, fair enough.
I may not get the love, but I pay attention.
I appreciate it, Casey. I appreciate that. All right. Let's do it. Let's take a quick break and discuss A Haunting in Venice.
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. Fuck the prime time.
Main feature.
John.
Eric.
I don't want to be too dramatic.
That's usually a bad sign.
I really needed this. Needed this movie. Yeah.
You did seem to be quite on the edge, I'd say.
Last week. Yeah.
For Eric.
You listened last week, you heard I was on the edge. Yeah. This movie buoyed me, John, and I'm excited to talk about it tonight.
Okay. Good. I'm glad.
See, Rachel?
Part of the 1%. I like it.
What I'm dealing with here, Rachel? I'm feeling good tonight, other than being sick, and John's just, he's not there for it.
Yeah. I celebrate you. I celebrate you in your
no oring. I just want to be seen by you, Schnars. I just want to be witnessed.
Sorry, I was actually pulling on my word, which I did research slightly before the show, but then forgot to pull up the page.
I know, John. It's all about you. Please bring us the word of the day.
Oh, shit.
Speaking of, we were talking about main character syndrome before the show, John.
Somebody needs to keep this show on the rails, is what I'm saying.
And so, and how in remote meetings, I'm mostly just looking at myself.
I think I mentioned I turn off the self view on a remote meeting.
Oh, why would you do that? You can't look at
Because
yourself.
I don't want to see myself. I don't need to see myself. I know what I look like. And I know it's very distracting.
I love
in any event.
He's distracted looking at his own beautiful face.
Look at
I know
that beautiful
what I look
bastard.
Like.
Wait, what were we talking about?
I would actually hide my self view in the StreamYard if I could, but you can't.
Meanwhile, I'm like, still got it.
Okay. Today's word is gondola. Gondola. Ooh. It's a noun. A light flat-bottomed boat used on Venetian canals, having a high point at each end and worked by one oar at the stern. It can also be a cabin on a suspended ski lift. And then in North America, apparently this is only a North American usage, an open railroad freight car, the gondola car.
I'm not big on a flat bottom, John. I like a little action back there.
No comment. I don't need to.
Just a
I
little
thought it wasn't
something.
Just me.
Eric, I think you're gonna like this etymology then, because gondola comes to us from the word gondola, the Rhaeto-Romance, basically like a proto-Italian. The original word meant to rock, comma roll.
It's funny you say that.
Gondola's a rockin'.
Casey just put in the chat the first thing that came to my mind when you said that, which is flat bottom boats make the rockin' world go around. hell of a song.
They do something.
All right, John. What does that have to do with A Haunting in Venice?
Well, the gondola is, I would say, the iconic mode of transportation.
Yeah, this movie made me want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Had you previously been like, fuck Venice? Like,
I had given Venice zero thought until I watched this movie.
Interesting.
Or probably since the last thing I saw that was like, here's Venice.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of that after the floods earlier this year. That looked freaky.
I mean, the whole city is sinking. There's a piece of dialogue in this. I mean, but it's been that way for, you know, hundreds of years. So
yeah, or clock's ticking. Whatever. You better get over there, friend.
A Haunting in Venice is the third film in this most recent run of Hercule Poirot films, based on Agatha Christie novels, all of which were directed and star Kenneth Branagh. Is he a sir? Do we have to call him sir? If he's not, he will be at some point.
I think he is. I believe he is.
He's on his way. He's either there already or he's on his way. So, you know, preemptively or not, Sir Kenneth Branagh. This one written by Michael Green. I actually didn't look. Was he involved in the previous? No, he wrote Blade Runner 2049. He wrote Logan. He also wrote the Green Lantern film. You remember that one?
Bona fides right there, John. That's a grip of really good movies. I loved Logan. Logan's like a favorite.
Yeah, no, it's like a...
It's great.
It's one of the top three or four superhero movies, period, probably.
It's official. He is Sir Kenneth Branagh since 2012.
There you go. Okay. I apologize for, you know, not having known or not, you know, fully known. Here's the setup. Poirot is in retirement in Venice. He is found there by Tina Fey, who's playing a character named Ariadne Oliver, who is herself a mystery writer. I mean, she's kind of the Christie stand-in.
Yeah.
I should say the film is based on the novel is called Halloween Party. It's pretty late. I was trying to find right before we started the show. It comes like, it's like one of the later Poirot novels. I mean, which makes sense. I mean, he's in retirement here. She finds him. She convinces him that he needs to come see this medium who is here played by Michelle Yeoh, named Mrs. Reynolds. They are at the house of Rowena Drake, who is a famous opera singer.
Great names in this movie.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And Rowena Drake's daughter, her sort of, let's say like early 20s or maybe like late teens daughter, had died under mysterious circumstances, ruled a suicide by the police, I believe. But then there was also this question of like, she had a mark on her back and this house that she lived in, this palazzo, was haunted due to something that happened during World War II there. And there's this whole backstory about kids being murdered by doctors and so on and so forth. So the daughter dies under mysterious circumstances. The mom is distraught. She gets in touch with this famous medium. The medium's going to contact the daughter and like going to put the mom back in contact with the daughter for the first time. Ariadne Oliver has sort of like helped broker this or set it up. She's writing a book about the medium. And so she wants Poirot to like help her suss out whether or not the medium's legit. That's the setup. They get there. They have the seance. It's like, it's spooky, which is, we should say why we're talking about it on a horror podcast. Like this is not, it is a straight up mystery film. And we can talk about what that means, but, this one is very
horror trappings.
Yeah. They like marketed it for sure to be very horror-y and, mm-hmm. and it actually is in the way that it unfolds, like pretty horror-y, yeah. which some of which is like a bit of a spoiler. Maybe we'll get into it.
I think it's probably more of a legit horror film than I was expecting.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that for sure.
Interesting.
All right, Rachel.
Yeah.
Have you seen the other ones? I think we maybe chatted about this last week.
I have not seen the other ones. And I was going to try to squeeze them in, but then I had a business trip, so I ran out of time. But I did like this one quite a bit. I think it's interesting that you guys thought it was more horror than you were expecting, because I know people who went to it thinking it was a horror movie, and they're like, wait, this is a mystery? They had no idea based on
the first two are
marketing.
Not horror movies at all. That's why. So having that context, I think I was like, how far are they going to push into it here, I guess?
Right.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that there is a risk of people being disappointed by the fact that it is more of a mystery with horror elements. That being said, I do think it's this really interesting marriage of, you know, a cozy whodunit and a gothic classic ghost story. I think it's, you know, Poe gets name checked in this, and I feel like there's a lot of like that DNA in this with sort of like the melancholy metaphorical ghost story kind of thing. I thought it was really visually interesting. Kenneth Branagh is unleashed creatively in this thing and having the best time. Like, there's a scene where he literally has the like mounted camera like as he's running through the palazzo. And he's just chewing up the scenery. It has a great cast, and I think that it's a perfect sort of way to slip into spooky season. So I had a great time with this one.
Love it. Casey, what'd you think?
I enjoyed this a lot. Just a second here. That is all the way down, by the way, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I was a big fan of the first two movies too. We are a Agatha Christie household. I don't know it necessarily myself. Our dog is named Agatha Christie. So full disclosure, my wife's a big fan. We watch a lot of murder mysteries, so this is right up our alley. I think Kenneth Branagh is like a perfect reincarnation of Poirot. There's been a couple versions of Poirot over the years, different actors. I think Kenneth Branagh mixes in perfectly with those previous actors. And I was excited with this for the cast too. Michelle Yeoh is always exciting to see her show up in a movie. She she shows up, it's going to get a step up in quality there. I was really excited to see Tina Fey show up in this to play a serious role. I'm a huge fanboy of Tina Fey. I love her comedy. I love her writing. She's like my sense of humor. So it's exciting to see her, you know, dig into a serious role. I know she's done more serious roles otherwise, but seeing her do it in an Agatha Christie movie, it's like, oh, I have no idea what this is going to look like. And I was thrilled by it the way it turned out. I think Tina Fey was awesome in this. The whole cast was. So yeah, this was a great experience for me.
John.
Yeah, I also had a very nice time. I have not seen any of the previous movies. And I'm like aware of Agatha Christie. I've definitely read And Then There Were None. I may have read like one or two of the others. I guess for me, and maybe we've talked about this, like I've read a bunch of other mystery writers, like just, I kind of like dabble in some of the different series. And there's actually one, the writer's name is Donna Leon, who writes the Commissario Brunetti series, which are all set in Venice. He's basically like he's like a detective in Venice. And it's amazing. And so like, I also love like a nice Venetian mystery story.
That sounds suitably fancy for you.
They're like pretty fancy, but they're
John's
not.
Like, I only like specifically Venetian mysteries.
No, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't even remember why I picked them up in the first place, like, but like, I've probably read
mystery.
Nice. I've read like five or six of those. So in any event, this movie, Rachel, you're definitely right. Kenneth Branagh and the writer kind of like work in some of the sort of spooky elements, and it has this sort of like gothic horror. You know, I mean, they're using the Venetian, the Venice setting it really effectively. It at its core, this is like by the numbers murder mystery.
Yeah,
but in a way that I just loved. Like it's like warm bath genre.
This is cozy horror. That's like my whole hypothesis about this movie.
Yeah, but it's cozy mystery. Like it's funny, yeah. Rachel. You mentioned like people who went to this thinking it was horror.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I don't know. If you see Tina Fey and Kenneth Branagh, I mean, Kenneth Branagh with that friggin' mustache, like, it's like, guys, like, what do you think you're getting into here?
It is camp. It is pure camp. Yeah.
There were people in my theater. My theater, I went on Sunday night. My theater was pretty crowded for a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And there were people, like, gasping at the horror sequences, which I was sort of, like, looking around, like,
some of that.
This is some, like, normie horror experience.
I went on a Tuesday night. It was, like, a third full on a Tuesday at 6:30.
It was probably half on Sunday night, which, you know, it is what it is. But, no, so, I mean, look, we can talk about some of the other aspects of this. It's hard, like, if you go into this being, like, I want to hear, like, a great... I want to see great characters and like hear great that like that's not what we're here for. Each character has like a very small element at their core.
You know what it is? What you're kind of dancing around, I think, is that it's pulpy.
It's like, genre.
On purpose,
it's pure.
Campy and pulpy on purpose. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a way that I think makes it, there's a lot of talk. You wouldn't know this, John, because you're not on the internet. But
No, I'm not.
A lot of talk lately about like, what is cozy horror? And I think a lot of people interpret that to mean, oh, whatever my comfort watch is. Like, but to me, if you really want to like define what it is, it's something like this. Like you say warm bath. This movie is so comfortable to just slip into. Like Kenneth Branagh as a director is having like the time of his life. Like it's so visually indulgent. Like he's using every little old timey trick he's ever seen in an old black and white movie. Like there are scares that for me had vibes almost like old school, like haunting the haunt. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say? The haunting. Mm-hmm. Like shit. Like there's in particular this one scene where Tina Fey's hand comes into the frame, like from a hallway as like a little jump scare. But what's nice is like, there's some jump scares and some of them are like, but none of them are loud. None of them are like ass shaking, earth rattling jump scares where your whole body, where you have to physically jump because the thing was just too loud. Yeah. Like they're just, but they're, you know, they're not earth, they're not like change your life jump scares, but they're just like fun little visual setups that make you jump. The cast is a delight. As a person who, I didn't know anything about this other than I knew, you know, I know what he is, like what the
had
general
you had
idea
seen
was.
At least one of the other ones?
I've seen the first one and I saw half of the second one on a plane. It was like, I don't know about this one. I think this one's better than the first one, honestly. It's a little more ambitious in like the campiness, I think, in a way. The cast is a delight. I wish we had seen a little more Michelle Yeoh. Because she has a presence and is like perfect for that character. Yes. I didn't know Tina Fey was in the movie. So when Tina Fey showed up, I was like, oh shit, okay. And like, that is my SNL cast, that like early 2000s, like Tina Fey, Jimmy Fallon, like that's my like, so I have so much Tina Fey nostalgia. And
I would say Tina Fey, by the way, is there. I mean, Casey, you said she's in a serious role. She's like hamming it up. She's definitely comic relief.
And there's almost a moment if you're used to like, if you're used to her, you know her, you almost have to take a moment to calibrate because she sounds like she's doing an SNL character at first. Like she sounds like she's in one of those Bill Hader, like Vincent Price sketches, basically. But it's fun. Like, you know, you just kind of go with it. You know who I weirdly loved because I just don't have a lot of opinions on him is Jamie Dornan. I thought is great in this movie.
Yeah.
Although I kept thinking about how on the press tour for maybe you're like aware of this for Rachel. What are those movies called?
50 Shades.
That him and Dakota Johnson apparently hated each other and couldn't barely stand to be in the same room when they had to go do the press tour. Yeah. And so there's great super cuts of the two of them just not wanting to be in the same place.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's like the only thing I know about him basically. But he's really, he's got like this, again, to your, what you're saying, John, like every character has a thing. Mm-hmm. And so what the actor has to do is like nail that one thing. Like you are this guy.
He
you
was
are
the guy who has, that's the doctor.
You are the doctor who has spells and your tiny little adult child is going to like.
Parentified child. Parentify. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the kid. I thought the kid was great.
Yeah. And I also really love Poppy Montgomery in this. And that's her name, right? The blonde. Well, she, I don't know.
No, you mean Rowena?
That's Kelly Riley.
Kelly Riley. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like the lead in Yellowstone.
I know who you're thinking of, but it's, and she does, they do kind of look alike, but
holy shit, is that not her?
Yeah.
Okay, it's, this is what I'm talking about, though. So I don't know who. Who is a hold on?
You just like made up a name. Like I've never even heard of that person.
Oh, they Kelly do kind of look alike.
Is, okay. I feel like we just got tested, right? Like we're like,
wow, that was can some real
that out, and
that was some real Inception shit. Okay, so like
that's hilarious.
Todd Montgomery's real person. She does kind of look like her, but this is who I was talking about. Anyway, I like her. I like Kelly Riley. It's funny because she was in True Detective season 2.
Right.
Which has been a topic of discussion on the show. Yes. But I absolutely loved this movie. It's just a delight. It uses uses such great, like it uses Venice so well.
Mm-hmm.
I love the choice to just have it raining the whole time because what you just feel is like wet, like dampness, wetness. Mm-hmm. It's a theme. Like he sees it sort of running down the walls. I will say the first reveal I found slightly confusing, like the exact machinations of like who is what people motivations, and then they breeze by it real quick because it's kind of not the important reveal.
Wait, which reveal are you talking about?
First reveal, which is where we find out Tina Fey's game.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was kind of like, what? Like I overall I understood it, but he's like rapid fire explaining his shit and you're just like yes I understood so, that
I will say I thought that they were heading toward Tina Fey being the like full-on murderer so then right that now happened and I was like
so there's a little
that was the
basically
like fake reveal yeah exactly.
It's real brutal though, like it is funny because it is light, it does have like a romp kind of feel, but there is this like thread about that Poirot character being cursed kind of and being dark and like they also they reference like a lost wife or love or something, which I'm sure was in one of the other movies and I just don't remember because I'm
probably
set up on them
canon.
But like when Tina Fey's like
also
motives
doesn't
get,
matter just like
when Tina Fey's motives get revealed, she just like savages him. She's just like you're a piece of shit, everyone dies around you, you know it, like whatever, you wouldn't even be famous if it wasn't for me. I'm like damn dude, like it's pretty brutal.
I do love that performance though when she does the little switch where she's like playing innocent and then she's just like, well, you got me. Like that's and she goes from innocent to sinister so quickly.
And those are the great like pulpy moments.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this movie was a delight. It is weirdly, even though like not straight up horror, it's one of the more horror-y things we've seen this year because of the way that it like is really playing with all those genre tropes. I don't know, like it gave me a spooky Halloween time vibe.
Like, I mean, I love the shadow puppet. Yeah. Like the aesthetics of this and the atmosphere of this is where I think it really like dips into the horror.
And a movie where most of the theoretical light was from like torches and candles that was really nicely and evenly lit.
Well, you were mentioning the rain. The water is such a character in this movie. And one of my favorite shots that I think was like one of the more horror-y moments was there was a scene after the first two deaths, and then they are in like the music room, and there's water leaking out of the wall. It may have been the dining room or something, and
no,
they turned around. Okay, but Poirot turned like and looked and cascading. Watching that water cascading down the wall, that it kind of lit, so it looks like there's an M and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that was a perfect little horror moment there. That's like Haunted House 101.
Mm-hmm. And I loved I liked the little, and they explain it, which is great, but his little like horror-y, there's a sort of like plot device that allows him to see spooky things.
Oh,
and
well,
therefore
that's
allows us to see it.
That was just chef's kiss because
it,
you know, there's a lot, there's like lesser versions of this movie. So I think Eric, it was you that said there's a couple things. It is trying to like thread a pretty, you know, narrow needle or whatever, like small needle hole. I don't know. What are you doing? The threading, between like being fun, campy, you know, funny, like actually like have jokes, but also like it's about serious shit. And like, there's like kids getting murdered and there's like a little kid running around who may also get murdered. And then his dad dies. I mean, it's like some pretty dark stuff. Yeah. And it, he does it very effectively. And there's also all this like ridiculous, at a certain level, potentially ridiculous Poirot seeing things, but then is explained as effectively, I think, as anything has ever been explained. You know, because ultimately these movie mystery of mystery film like this has to come back to solid ground, like, you know, which is not just a pun based on the water. Like, but I mean, but a detective film like this, like if you if you're not wrapping it all up, if you're not bringing it back to a clean conclusion, then it's a different thing. Like, I think for these Agatha Christie stories, especially, like, I don't know that.
I feel like there's still a little ambiguity by the end of this about it, there being some supernatural aspect to it. You don't think so?
He was being drugged. I mean, like, it's very straight
well,
up.
I know
like,
that part of it, but there's also
Was there a last thing that happened after this, that?
The daughter showing, the ghost of the daughter showing up. And I think there was, I think at the end when Rowena
you mean
falls,
like,
and
I think that's all like a little winky in
I
my
think
mind.
Thematically, it's important to actually have there be some sort of ambiguity around that, because it's about him kind of reclaiming his soul and believing that there's something else out there after like having this like post World War II sort of loss of belief. So I do think that there's intentional ambiguity in some elements of it.
Yeah, I guess I mean, my interpretation of that scene is we're seeing it from his perspective. And so you're getting residual visions. But fair
That's
enough.
That's the ambiguity.
Like, he's getting a sweet flashback.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It is, and we. I guess we should have mentioned like this is set. I think it's 47.
By the way,
so it's like the exact same year as Nun 2, I believe.
Oh, by the way,
it might have been whatever. It was a couple
for the record, Mad Honey is a real thing that you can buy on. There's a company that sells it.
I assumed that was real. Yeah.
I almost bought it like a year ago.
It's. You called it out, Schneiders, there, but I think it's important to call it as much as we talk about how the mystery and the horror elements of this, there's some good jokes in this movie, too.
It got me, I laughed out loud like a couple times. I wasn't like belly laughing, but it got me. Like Tina Fey's got some great lines.
Well, and Poirot, Kenneth Branagh's a great actor. Yeah. Like, he's a really good actor. So,
like, and it's a great decision, though. The two of them together, just delightful. Like, because he's a little dry, so it helps to have her next to him being like, oh, like bebop and scatting, you know, and then like they can sort of play off of each other.
Well, that's what makes the Mad Honey angle of this so good, because Kenneth Branagh plays this character so well, and we've seen it now the third time, so we know that Poirot is very fastidious and he's very proper, very articulate and everything like that. So like, that was a big moment for me when he had first, after he'd been attacked and he was talking and then he stuttered. And even Poirot's like, oh God, what was that? And I'm sitting in the audience with him going, oh no, what happened? Something's not right.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting that you guys keep talking about how light this is. I actually think it's like there is a melancholy vein that runs through.
That's what
this.
I'm like, saying. Yeah.
Like, but it just manages because of to the kind character of balance him, those tones. Yeah.
The character himself just sort of care that goes with him.
But I think it's also specifically set in a very
point in time
where like people are dealing with a lot of trauma and like a lot of I mean, it's interesting, you can draw parallels to like current day and like where we are, and it's 2023, so all movies ultimately have to be about trauma and grief, and but I think by putting it in that time, it like gives us a little bit of space that even though you can relate to it, like it doesn't have the same sort of psychic toll when you're watching. It's not as emotionally expensive when you're watching something that's current.
Even if you set aside the like World War II stuff, I like the idea of setting something like this in like old world Europe. Like they talk about the idea that like these buildings are so old, they're just filled with ghosts, basically, generations upon generation.
Yeah. Right. Well, and it's presented in a way that, and I'm not knocking trauma or anything like that, but it could be something you can, it's easy to assume something like just kind of a general depression to it. It works into that angle as well. So well,
these are all haunted people.
The place itself has a weight on people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also I think they all are like, they come into it with this baggage that is like very much linked to literally the time that it's taking place. And they're all incredibly haunted people. And that's why I'm saying, like, we needed to kind of, for us to believe what happens at the end with him and him, like, kind of like regaining his mojo and wanting to get back in there and having faith in humanity again. Like, he has to have experienced something.
He was drunk, just to be clear. He was in an altered state of mind. But
yes, yeah. I understand.
You know who we haven't talked about, guys? The bro fiance.
Is he your That's favorite? Fine.
Big fan. Big fan. No, well, I mean, you were mentioning the fact, like, this is it is an ensemble film, right? It's mm-hmm. Again, it's a genre aspect of a mystery series like this. Like, you have to set up lots of different potential
red herrings.
Yeah. I mean, even with him, there's never really a question, because this is the other thing that was a little interesting in this movie.
They make
him
too obvious right out of the gate that, you know, it's not him, but the film plays with all these different red herrings.
Yeah. Well, the thing that this movie does too is it has like multiple murders in it. Like, there's the original murder that they're like there having the seance about, but then Michelle Yeoh gets killed. Pretty like, frankly, like, to her, like, she's just got killing it and then immediately gets killed.
Yeah.
and then you get the doctor. What's his name? Jamie Dornan? Mm-hmm. Dornan
is the his real name.
You know,
I thought
so
the fiance was Jamie Dornan.
There's nested. There's like the original whodunit that you think you're solving, but then another one gets introduced, and it's not even immediately clear that it's the same person, at least the first two times.
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously by the third, you're sort of like, okay. I mean, Poirot's figuring it out at that point. I don't know. It's great. I love it. Like, the fact that they have room to bring in the bro fiance. And then, as I was mentioning earlier, we touched on briefly, the kid is just delightful. You know, and then the other two pairings that we get.
The actor's fine. The character is just a little too like precocious kid trope for me. Like, all right.
Yeah. I don't know.
He reads books, whatever. It was a personal attack.
Jealous. He's like, how dare this little kid read books? And then you have what were they? Hungarian, or they were Romani. Romanian. Yeah, right. They were, the assistants. That's another one that they're like so obviously not the killers, but they do kind of like carry that pretty far. But even when you're sort of running down the threads of some of these things that you know aren't real, you're still having a good time. It's kept pretty brisk. The movie's only like an hour and 40 minutes, which like,
love that runtime.
You get a lot of, there's a lot of plot that's effectively deployed in that amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it never does feel slow at any moment in this movie. The pacing, I think, is like one of the best things of it. It's perfectly paced.
It's really well edited, right? Even, you know, you all were mentioning Brana kind of going a little ham on some of the shot choices. Like, let's turn the camera upside down. But even then, I think the editing does keep it brisk and like it feels better than a lot of other things, you know, or than this might have been in other hands.
He loved a good like wide angle lens close up in this movie to just think that gives you that like disorienting.
It's so distorting. Yeah. Like, at the edges of the frame in a bunch of the shots. Is Orient Express this visually?
Yes.
It's a pretty movie. I don't know that there's as many like visual tricks because the space is different. Like, there's only so much you can do, but it's definitely like, it's a lot about the setting and the costuming and the countryside and the, you know, like, it's pretty for sure.
Yeah. And it's super colorful too.
It had that great, I always think of the first trailer for that first movie was a POV shot moving down slowly down a train car to all these famous faces. And they were all giving their alibis. Like, it couldn't have been me, but it was like very, you know, that first cast was probably the most like A-listed. Trying to think, I only remember Josh Gad for some reason, but there was a lot more people in it than that. It's funny to live in a world where both this and the Benoit Blanc character are like out there at the same time. If only they could cross over, but I don't think it can happen.
Wait, is that the Glass Onion?
That's the Knives Out Glass Onion. Yeah.
See, I will say, the Christie influence.
You know, I think that Knives Out is an incredible movie, like better than all these movies. But like then he made Glass Onion, and I was like, I don't know what the hell this is. Like, did you understand why the first one was good? That's a Rian Johnson problem in general. What? But say what you will about like this series here, but it's very consistent. Like I think they know what the deal is and why this is fun. They're not the like world's most ambitious movies, but they are just fun and cozy. And I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to. Talking about Agatha Christie, it's important to point out, like somebody mentioned her at the top of the show, and I'm not saying they're saying anything bad, but this movie felt like as a mystery kind of, for you know, a little bit like formulaic and kind of by the numbers, not too overly complicated. And Knives Out, like Rachel said, was heavily Agatha Christie influenced. Mm-hmm. So you got the main character that's eccentric, and then you know you kind of got the by the numbers stuff. It's important to point out that Agatha Christie helped. Lay out those numbers.
Yeah.
Originally. Yeah. I mean, she kind of helped it.
She was the origin of the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they're fairly faithful in their adaptation. I mean, that's.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know, Rachel, are they not?
This is not.
Okay.
No. This is like a hodgepodge of like three different stories. And then it's like, the Halloween party is not in Venice. Gotcha. It is not at this time. They use the character names, but they're changed. Like it's very, very much loosely adapted.
Yeah.
The was Orient then more straight? I haven't seen it.
Orient was a more of a straight up adaptation.
Oh yeah, for sure. There was somebody surprising name I saw in the producer credits. Did anybody catch that?
Well, Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott was the one that surprised me.
He's been on all three of them. It looked like so. Yeah.
I would genuinely love if every year we got two of these movies.
Two? One,
well, here's why. One that's just like a regular mystery, and then give me one of these babies every Halloween. Give me like, he gets pulled into some new haunted, creepy mystery every year.
Well, so I was a horror version of it, and then there would be none, and then there are none, or whatever that is.
I would so much rather do that every Halloween than go see another Saw at this point.
Eric, you don't know, bro. Wait till 10. Wait till X hits, and then the thing, they've made the Agatha Christie stuff into television show. Like there was a Poirot run, I think on BBC, or one of the, you know, sort of like classic run. I'm sure you could, Eric, we can find that for you. We can, you know.
I'm pretty sure there's two TV show flavors out there. I don't know
about British TV, John. I don't get it.
Oh, come on.
Just by and large.
British TV is the true home of like Agatha Christie murder TV shows. That's where you want to be. They've got tons of, they've got Father Brown mysteries. And
I like it better in like movie form, and then I can move on.
I feel like sort of like dry, dark humor of the Brits would do well. You would do well with that. I'm kind of surprised you're not into it.
I thought like I always get into this. What are you guys doing here? The original Office, I literally couldn't get through one episode. I thought it was like the most grating thing I'd ever seen. So I don't know that tracks, Rachel.
Some people are just wrong about stuff. That's what it is.
Now I just want to like, I think we'll do an exchange. You send me some giallo suggestions. I'll send you some British comedy suggestions.
I'll tell you a British thing I saw. There is a thing, I wish I could remember the name of it. Shudder had it. It was like a limited series from Britain that was basically about a dude, a real life story, I guess. I think about a guy who returns from like World War II and he becomes a serial killer, like, but he's married, and basically the film it's a mini series, and each episode is like a different era of his life. Ooh. Like the first one is like right when he gets back, the next one's like 10 years later, and it's like his wife kind of knows but doesn't want to know, and like he ends up murdering the neighbor of the wife of his neighbor. It's a whole I'd have to go find out.
Sounds good.
Is, but anyway, that's British, and I liked it.
Wow. One British thing. Okay.
Isn't Ridley Scott British? I like some of his movies.
Eric, did you watch, maybe we talked about it on the show, but did you watch the Natasha Lyonne, Rian Johnson?
Poker Face.
Poker Face.
I watched it like two episodes, didn't care for it.
I would watch Natasha Lyonne do literally nothing.
It's really good, and it's like the best version that I've seen in a while of the like murder of the week.
Yeah, see, I think I just can't do that format anymore. I can't do the like procedural different thing every week. Like I need the momentum of a larger story more.
I guess the point I would,
you know what,
is like
a
this
great
movie
larger,
is that. It's
you
just
know what has a great larger story, John?
Don't
Deadwood.
Do it. Oh, Deadwood. I thought you were going to say True Detective Season 2.
No, it doesn't. That does not. That's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty out on that. Are you watching season? Are you waiting for after Deadwood to go to Season 3? True Detective?
I have no desire to watch True Detective Season 3, which is the only reason I went through 2, just so I could like catch up.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back and watch Orient Express for sure.
You should.
That's, yeah. It's
delightful. I've been thinking about revisiting for sure.
Yeah.
You big Josh Gad fan, John?
I do. I love Josh Gad. Olaf.
Who doesn't like Josh Gad?
Yeah, he's my favorite Frozen character by like a, you know,
he feels
margin.
Like a person that would have a fairly large doesn't like contingency, but it's just me.
You think? I feel like he's such a, like a, I don't know, just like a smile of a human.
Mm. My worry is that he's in that mode all the time.
Right.
That's fair.
That articulates it pretty well. So wait, Googling on the show. So that first movie, Kenneth Branagh, Judi Dench, Johnny Depp. Ugh. That's Daisy. Right. Daisy Ridley, Michelle Pfeiffer, Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah.
That's it. That's an
I think
cast
Johnny
right
Depp
there.
Dies pretty fast, right?
Like, I don't even remember him being in a movie, so he must.
Mm-hmm. Willem Dafoe.
Ooh.
Willem Dafoe. Yeah. Like, it's. That's a cast.
I feel like the Willem Dafoe excellence cancels out the Johnny Deppness.
I do not remember this many people being in this movie.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, look, I can separate the art from the artist.
Oh,
so
you're
like,
so evolved.
I mean, I didn't. Is that evolved? I would thought I was going to be accused of not being evolved for doing that. But
well, everybody acts like it is like a virtue to be able to not see the consequences on marginalized people.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I
mean,
I would say I can or I can't, depending on the person. Like, it really depends on the person for me. Like, yeah. how much did I like them pre whatever? Johnny Depp sort of falls into Tom Cruise territory for me, where like. I think he acts as himself in every role. So I'm kind of like, I don't need you in this movie. Like,
see, I'm on my high horse over here, but I am such a Tom Cruise apologist that
I can barely tolerate him in movies because like, he's just himself and everything.
Have you watched the Mission Impossible movies?
I've gone to the avoid end of the spectrum on Tom Cruise.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. They each their own.
I mean, he probably covered up a murder, Rachel. You realize that?
I don't know. Is that true? I don't know.
Isn't that the whole deal? Scientology?
I just know he's like Mr. Z, you know.
The Scientology guy's wife like disappeared and no one will
Shelley
talk about
Matt Miscavige or whatever.
Yeah. Man.
The FBI says she's still alive.
You're always quoting the FBI.
I know, right? Reliable source, the FBI. Also the CIA.
Yeah.
Well, unlike the story coming from somebody who lives in San Francisco, Rachel, with trust in the FBI.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't think they can find David Miscavige right now either. So
that's probably true.
Haunting in Venice. Would we recommend this? Casey?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yeah, definitely. Is this
John?
Yes.
Yeah, I say yes, and I say go see it in the theater.
Yeah.
It's a great spooky time. So there you go. All right. Let's take a quick break and do some fan mail.
There's a new series coming to television. If you don't watch it, you could be making a grave error. Series.
Hi, this is Doug Bradley, Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies, welcoming you to Bloody Good Horror.
info@bloodygoodhorror.com or on Twitter using #AskPGH. Join Patreon to get back episodes and much more. Patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror.
If you had to guess, John, where I would slot this in my top 10, where would you say?
I honestly, I'm ready for you to just go straight to the top. That's how I'm, that was the vibe I was getting.
Close, not quite.
I can't remember what else. Yeah, would you have Megan number one?
So right now I have Bo is Afraid at number one.
Oh God, I forgot about Bo is Afraid.
What? I think I might have just, oh shit.
It's Bo is Afraid is probably not making my list as a, just as like, when I think back on it, I don't go, oh yeah, that was a horror movie. I'm like,
I don't care. It was the best thing I saw this year. Okay. Bo is Afraid, Megan.
It's just like a list of movies Eric's seen.
Wait for next week. Or is it next week when we do, 2 weeks, we're going to do Creator.
Bo is Afraid,
Megan, number three. Haunting in Venice.
Okay. Wow. Oh, Megan's still in that second spot. I thought this was going to bump it.
Megan is pretty good. And you know what? I think The Blackening might
You should go watch Megan again.
I didn't like The Blackening very much at first glance. And now I'm looking at everything here. It might sneak its way back onto my list.
It deserves it just for Urkel Goes Berserk.
Hell yeah, dude. That's
it line it of had year. Moments, but it's not making my list, that's for sure.
I just don't like any. I just think this year's just been a whole heap of shit.
This year's lists are going to be wild. I feel like we're not going to have alignment.
I definitely just accidentally deleted whatever my number five was, so I don't even know what that was.
Was it now, Infinity Pool? Didn't you?
I still have that here. I still have Scream 6. Knock at the Cabin, Talk to Me, Evil Dead.
Edit, Undo, Bud.
So now my just...
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah, but I already made a bunch of changes, Casey. Wait, all right, you're fine.
He's going to undo it. It was just a blank cell to begin with.
I think I did that right. I think it was fine. I think we're fine.
This has turned into the Sounds of Casey at Work podcast.
Spreadsheets. So
I think I did it.
So off my list currently, Cobweb, The Pope's Exorcist, Sick, and The Blackening. Mm-hmm. Those are cast off the list so far.
Interesting. Yeah, these lists are going to be weird this year. This is a weird
I need to decide year. If they clone Tyrone will make my list. I guess it might. Just wish that
Rachel, we were because we have an open week next week, right? We decided, and we were wondering if there is a top 10 current Rachel top 10 that we have not covered that we should be considering.
Ooh, well, let me pull up my list.
You see different things than we see. This is
what lady?
I mean,
movie
Saw
got
X. You just blink once if you but Saw X, I assume, is already on your list penciled in.
I mean, so, I did see it.
I know you saw it. Yeah.
So, let's see here. Birth Rebirth, that's on my list.
Our list to catch.
Yeah, we definitely want to see that.
Let's see, what else did I give thumbs up to? God, this year is not good. Unwelcome was surprisingly fun. I made Casey watch it. Maybe he can weigh in.
Do you remember
that one? You liked it? Yeah, that one. Yeah.
I don't know if it would be a top 10 contender for these two.
I mean, this year maybe, but normally no.
What about the Nick Cage thing? What is that called?
Oh,
Sympathy for the Devil?
Oh, Sympathy for the Devil?
Is that good?
I don't think it's top 10 contender, but I mean, it's Nick Cage, Nick Caging. If you're just in the mood to watch him just chew the shit out of scenery, I got a movie for you.
Casey's
I'm not going to say no.
Three times. Yeah.
I watched the trailer for that new A24. It's not horror, unfortunately, but that new A24 film with him in it looks pretty good.
And just for the listeners,
he's like in people's dreams. Everybody's dreaming about him.
I saw a headline about it, but I haven't watched the trailer.
Yeah.
Birth Rebirth is available. It's we can rent
it. It's up for rent.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's next week. Then.
It's definitely divisive, so you guys may not like it, but I liked it.
I demand to know if I will like it, Rachel.
That makes me. Yeah, I'm actually very excited then.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's of the stuff that everything else you guys have covered on here. We did not agree on some of them, but you've definitely covered them.
All right. I think we got one email this week, but I'm too tired to read it. So Casey, what do you got on?
Sorry, we'll save your email for next week. Yeah. Dear listener.
It was a valued listener. Caitlin Kissimmee. She understands.
All right, Caitlin. We got you.
She's cool. She gets it.
All right, we've got two questions out here on Threads. First up, Matt at Metal Prof, who on the BGH crew grows the best mustache?
Oh, me, for sure. I have a Hercule Poirot working right now.
The part that always gets me is like, okay, so I have a beard and, you know, the mustache is constantly growing out. It's like the thing that's got to be trimmed the most. To do what he is doing, like, you've got to let this part grow out. And the problem with that is, like, it starts to interfere with eating, and that becomes difficult.
Well, you have to use, like, product.
It's, I know,
like,
he's using some, like, but to get it like to do wax. What he's doing, that's, like, wax, like, hardcore wax. And I have some stuff that's a little, like, tackier that'll kind of do it. Mm-hmm. My beef is that, like, it's just a whole thing. Because then the next day, you got to clean it, rinse it out. And it's like impossible to get out of your hair once it's in there.
That was the one thing I missed in this movie. It was a tiny thing and silly, but I think it was at the beginning of Nile when Poirot, when we're first introduced to him in that movie, he rolls over in his cabin and he's got his little mustache protector on. And we didn't do that in this
but
movie.
But I will, you know, if I'm feeling a little fancy, I will give it a little.
Do you give it a little curly cue at the end? That's fun.
His mustache is weird in this movie. It reminds me of those. There's like a certain kind of caterpillar that's got lots of plumage that's also poisonous. Like you can't touch the quills.
The one that looks like
exactly
he has Trump hair.
It looks like. Yeah.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about.
See, it had the little points on each side. I thought it kind of looked like Dr. Eggman a little.
Like something about the two layers reads to me as bug like, and it freaks me out.
Yeah.
Centipede.
All right, and our other question is from the drummer from Foghat. Do you think Brock Lesnar would survive the Purge, or would he be the Purge?
100% survive. No problem.
Purge, yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't even be concerned. I don't even think he'd lock down.
No, I don't think.
Why
so.
Why bother?
I think he'd be out there like, bring it on.
Yeah, he's so funny because it's like it's so stupid. Like when you really. Like when you really think about any technical aspect of it, it makes no goddamn sense. But like as movies, they kind of work.
I actually think they're pretty good.
Like that last one was like pretty good.
Yeah.
Forever Purge or whatever.
I think there should be a drawing of just like Brock Lesnar in like a lawn chair out front of his house. Purge Day.
I feel like on Purge Day, he would wear a mask of his own face. Like that would be.
There you go.
Is that it?
That's it for Threads.
I did post to Twitter today.
X.
Did you hear John? He's about to start. He floated charging everyone to use Twitter.
Nice.
Seems like a crack plan.
I mean, whatever is going to make it go away faster.
Like, that would actually be it. That. If that happens, then it's all over. Yeah. We're done. We read that one. Boy, it really is dry out there on the old X. Are there any movies any of you have watched that have scared you on more than one viewing? Mm. Yes. I still find Session 9 to be scary.
Mm.
And I watch that movie a good 5 or 6 times a year.
Oh.
Also, it's probably worn off at this point. I think Session 9 is one of the best horror films ever made. It's like a top 10 for me.
Why hasn't Brad Anderson done anything else good?
That's a good question. It's probably worn off for me, but I found Hell House LLC frightening definitely on more than one viewing. Those are just modern ones, but like The Exorcist, The Shining.
Yeah.
Like still freak you out.
There's lots of stuff that I would say still scary. I don't watch that many things a second time. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Yes, and John.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Christ. Yes, and I celebrate you.
There you go. That's all I want, John, is a little recognition. Thank you. It's not hard. I don't need much, no. John. It's just, yeah. You got to listen to me, what Eric, I'm telling
you. I'm cold. I'm a withholding father or whatever that's stereotypes called.
It's true. Thoughts on Saw X? Any expectations? It's so silly. He looks so old, and then they cut to what's her face. Amanda. She looks super old, like. But we're supposed to believe this is like 15 years before, or whatever. Like, I guess what's funny about it is because what happened, right? They made two Saw movies, and then he dies in the canon, or whatever, right? Or maybe three, and then he dies.
Yeah.
And then every movie. They had to just bend over backwards, retconning the shit out of the story, adding new apprentices and people. Mm-hmm, so now it'll be kind of interesting to see, like, now they're almost going back for the ultimate retcon because now they can just show that shit in a movie, which is, I assume, where they're going because we see her, that they're going to get into all that stuff. It's just silly. I just bring him back as a zombie. Just give me what I want, John. Jesus Christ.
Wait. He's in the movie, right? Because he's not.
Yeah, it's like a prequel to every other Saw movies, including the first prequel they made. Right?
That's ridiculous.
It takes place. I can say this because this is known. It takes place between 2 and 3.
Oh my god! Like, are you fucking serious right now? Like, come on.
That's crazy because it assumes so much knowledge on the part of the viewer. Like. I guess, yes. Maybe, well, whatever.
As if you don't immediately don't wipe Rachel those in a movies. Weird spot here. But like, as if you don't immediately.
Talk amongst yourselves.
As if you don't immediately wipe those movies from your brain the second you walk out of the theater.
I mean, the first, I actually will go to bat for the original trilogy as like,
yes,
solid.
Yeah.
Which I believe Lee Whannell wrote all three of the first three films.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Juan directed only the first one and then turns it over to...
Did you ever see that meme that apparently the first Saw... So there's a scene in which you see the date on a character's flip phone and it's September 10th, 2001 is the date.
Oh, shit.
Isn't that amazing? Because the meme is like the guys from Saw had two bad days in a row.
Jesus Christ. Oh, Jesus. So ridiculous. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Like, I am leaving my expectations open. I haven't watched the trailer. I'm going to go in having not watched anything.
I would recommend that. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think the trailer doesn't give everything away, but it gives away a lot. And I think probably going in cold might be better.
Amazingly, Rachel, they didn't show it ahead of Haunting in Venice. Rachel, like all the normies in my theater would have shot their hands.
I did get it before Haunting in Venice. Oh, Rachel, wow. blink twice if it was good. Okay, interesting. That's patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror to see what Rachel just did. All right, Instagram, is your mustache fuller after seeing this? John, can you even grow a mustache? It's actually the chops you can't grow. Like, it's
I can't grow. That's one of your favorite pictures of him with the stash.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I do love that. What are your top five, or I forget top five? What are your like must haves during spooky season? So this can be food, movies, decor. Like, what's when it's spooky season? When you feel it revving up, like, what is it you're going for?
Just
Reese's peanut butter pumpkins is one.
Oh yes.
So I have a lame answer, but I get really excited for butternut squash in the fall. Like some nice.
That's a very squash. Like a grown-up mature answer. Thank you. Like, yeah.
Guys, we did s'mores on the fire pit out at the old Schnars Manch, nice. You know, in the mountains.
At the Palazzo.
Yeah, at the Palazzo.
The Schnars.
And it was so fucking great. Because it's getting chilly. It's like it was like in the like high 50s. Yeah. Like it was nice.
I love chilly. I love it when it's chilly. I love to bust out some sweatpants. I'm wearing sweatpants right now.
Hell yeah.
I get
preach,
excited.
Preach.
What were you going to say, Rachel?
I was going to say, you got to do the s'mores with the Reese's peanut butter cup.
Oh, Hondo.
You already
P.
been knowing? Okay.
Way ahead of you on that.
Okay. Just want to make sure because you, like, you have not lived.
You kind of have to do two marshmallows.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. You need to balance
because the peanut butter cut's so much bigger than like just the flat, you know, but an amen.
So I'm like sweatpants, like hearty, you know, winter surviving food. That's kind of my vibe. And then I take my kids to the dollar store and we just go ham at the dollar store and get all the like cheesy decorate. You know what I love? I love a good like holiday themed garland. I love a good Halloween garland. Yes. I can just wrap around my like staircase and like just all over the place.
Are your decorations up yet? That's the question.
No,
mine went up last week. My house is decked out.
The other thing I really love is cheesy window clings. And they're great because they're like a dollar. This is the theme. I'm cheap. But also it's the thing my kids can do because I don't give a shit. Put them anywhere. Like, I don't care. Like, just go nuts. And I just let, so then they can, you know, participate.
This is good. I'm going to get my kids to make Halloween decorations this weekend. This is a good activity.
Nice.
Cute. So I'm basic. I'm about that pumpkin spice latte. The minute that thing rolls out, spooky season has begun.
I will treat myself to a pumpkin spice every once in a while.
Because I can't. Yeah. Don't do any of that. But I love a good baked apple recipe, which is where you kind of like core out the apple and then you fill it with like, I don't do butter. I do like coconut oil and like sugar, like cinnamon sugar. And then you bake that. That'll give you the nice like fall smell.
Nice. Sounds like it would smell really good in the house when made it.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So, oh, you don't eat it?
He doesn't even eat it.
I do eat it.
He steps on it.
But it is a two-fold.
It's like weird foliage and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, it's already cold here like at night.
Oh, is it?
Like this morning was the first, so I turn air conditioning on at night starting in like April. I leave it on all summer at night. This morning was the first morning where the actual temp in my house was lower than I had it set in the air conditioning. So we're probably weeks away from heat going on, most likely.
I love it when it gets fall and you get to be cozy.
For me.
It's the best.
Casey, get in there.
I was just going to say it's potato soup season. That's all I was trying to say.
Potato soup. What's in that?
I do love potato soup.
Is it like a cream-based
potatoes?
Soup?
Yeah. Chunks of potato with... I use like frozen hash browns in the crock pot and then mix in some like... I haven't made it since last year, but like some chicken broth and kielbasa sausage and some onions and stuff. Let it cook all day. It's good stuff. Sticks to your ribs.
Not bad. Holy shit.
If you had to pick a place for a haunting other than Venice, where would it be?
I feel like a lot of them have been taken. Like you think like New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans came to mind.
Yeah,
we've definitely anywhere old worldy is a good setting.
Hmm.
I mean, New Orleans could be good if they use the whole city like they did in Venice for this one, I think, because a lot of times we get like one spooky house in New Orleans or something like that, which I know Venice was still
the swamp.
They made Venice itself a pretty big character.
New Orleans is funny when you go there because like there's definitely that old worldy area. Like that part of it. And then the rest of it is just the same Southern sprawl bullshit that every Southern city is.
Yeah.
Like they're like city planner. What's that? Who needs zoning laws?
I don't remember what movie it was, but there was a movie probably within like 20 years ago that they were in. It was taking place in the old timey part of New Orleans. And then they panned out and showed that Southern sprawl part in the background. And that was like 20 years ago. And I saw that in that movie. I'm like,
it's jarring when you see it.
It's
you're
not
like,
just that old timey part.
Best movie mustache. Surely Tombstone is taking the top 5 places alone. Who's in Tombstone?
Who that is up there?
Val Kilmer and
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
I mean,
because my answer was My answer was Bone Tomahawk. Like he outdoes himself with that mustache.
Same whiskers.
Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Similar set of whiskers.
I feel like, yeah, just Kurt Russell and everything, like, because immediately I thought of The Thing and like his gigantic glorious beard.
Yeah.
That thing is a work of art.
Love The Thing.
I want to shrink down to a tiny human size and take a nap on that thing. That's not weird. Everybody feels that way, right?
Sure. Yeah, this is how I felt about Jason Statham in that crew neck sweatshirt.
You just wanted to get too. In the nook. Yeah.
I just wanted to crawl in there. Yeah.
It's not a movie, but I got to throw in an honorable mention on that one. Jason Sudeikis in Ted Lasso. That's a pretty good mustache.
Kenneth Branagh, better as shirtless Dr. Frankenstein or poor Ralph? You ever seen that movie, John? You ever seen Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
That's the one with De Niro.
Yeah.
I maybe. I don't think I've ever watched it like in a sitting.
It is the kind of bad movie that only the 90s could have turned out. Like, it is the most 90s bad movie there is.
Is Helena Bonham Carter in that one too?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I have.
You know
seen
where
that
I've
one.
Seen it? Think actually, so. Casey, years ago, you shared with me a zip file filled with old Monster Vision, Joe Bob Berry's Monster Vision episodes, and he did it one week on that, and just ripped it the whole time, just about how bad it was.
I
saw that one in the theater. I just remember coming out confused and angry.
Browning directed it too.
Oh, see, he's cutting his teeth.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully,
like
he's grown since then.
Sweeping Frankenstein epic is the only, like, well, it's like they tried to make a sweeping historical epic that also had Frankenstein.
But that's the thing. I mean, like, right? Branagh's also, I mean, the other things he's directed are like mostly Shakespeare. he's done other stuff too. But like, he probably was sitting there like, no one's ever really treated this material the way it's meant to, you know, the way that Mary Shelley.
Like, and I'm pretty sure
it.
De Niro talks.
And it's
to,
like, well, there's a reason.
He talks.
I am an actor.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, does he do the whole, he goes to the Arctic and stuff?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. The book is like kind of crazy. Like, there's a lot of shit that happens in that book that is not in any of the films, let's say, for a reason.
Two more questions. Will Hollywood ever stop making movies with haunting in the title?
No. No. Why would they?
Because there's no way to signal your audience what's happening. Last question. Did you guess who done it? At some point I went, it's got to be the mom, right? Because at some point you got to think it's a character that they don't want you to think it. Like, you know, like, oh, she's too sympathetic. You're like, well, that's got to be her then. Right?
Yeah. No. By the end, it's like, well, especially when they do the... We talked about the sort of red herring. It's not Tina Fey. Like that to me was like, oh, well, there's only really one person left at that point.
Yeah. Like, I didn't guess how it went down.
It was the fiance talking to Poirot that gave it away for me. I clued in on the garden hints.
Because
there was two mentions of the garden.
Yeah, there
you
was.
You look like, sound like a man who has a dog named Agatha Christie. That's what I think.
No, I did. He mentioned something as he's talking to Poirot about the garden, and I literally leaned over because Colleen did, and I do that in the movies all the time. Oh! And she's like,
That's going to do it. For Haunting in Venice, I'm back, baby.
We're until back. The next haunting.
Yay.
Horror's alive. Never mind. I ignore everything I said last week. just kidding. This non-horror movie really did it for me. What are we doing next week?
We're going to do Birth Rebirth.
Love it.
All I know about this movie is nothing. The like one sentence description that shows up on Google when you Google it, and it sounds fucking wild.
All I know about it is it's called Birth Rebirth. That's it. That's it.
All right.
I don't know what you guys are going to think about it. Don't be mad at me.
I've now noted we were already leaning that way.
We just needed validation.
Yeah. We were organically interested, but you validated.
Okay.
I won't hold you accountable. Okay. Eric, I can't speak for it, but
it's fair. All right. That's it. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.